from their clothes. The girls from the House of the Blue Iris were easily identified by the color of their gowns and the flowers displayed in their hair and at their necklines. And no one could mistake the men of the Anvil, extensive tattoos on proud display, arms bare despite the chilly weather. The West Stave delegations have started to arrive. We can get in. Inej, said Kaz. Nina and I can get inside, she continued. Her back was straight, her tone steady. She looked like someone facing the firing squad and saying, damn the blindfolds. We enter with the menagerie.
28. Inej. 8 bells and half chime. Kaz was watching her intently, his bitter coffee eyes glittering in the light from the dome. You know those costumes, she said. Heavy cloaks, hoods, that's all the Fjordans will see. A Zemini fawn, a Kalish mare. She swallowed and forced the next words past her lips. A Suli lynx. Not people, not even really girls, just lovely objects to be collected. I've always wanted to tumble a Zemini girl, a customer would whisper. A Kalish girl with red hair. A Suli girl with burnt caramel skin. It's a risk, said Kaz. What job isn't?
Kaz, how are you and Matthias going to get through? Asked Nina. We might need you for locks, and if things go bad on the island, I don't want to be stranded. I doubt you can pass yourself off as members of the menagerie.
That shouldn't be a problem, said Kaz. Helvar's been holding out on us.
Have you? Asked Inej.
It's not...
Matthias dragged a hand over his cropped hair.
How do you know these things, Dimjan?
He growled at Kaz.
Logic. The whole ice court is a masterpiece of fail-safes and doubled systems. That glass bridge is impressive. But in an emergency, there would have to be another way to get reinforcements to the White Island and get the royal family out.
Yes, said Matthias in exasperation. There's another way to the White Island, but it's messy.
He glanced at Nina.
And it certainly can't be done in a gown.
Hold on, Jesper interrupted. Who cares if you can all get onto the White Island? Let's say Nina Sparkles Yule Bayor's location out of some Fjordan higher up and you get him back here. We'll be trapped. By then, the prison guards will have completed their search and are going to know 6 inmates got out of the sector somehow. Any chance we have of making it through the embassy gates and the checkpoints will be gone.
Kaz peered past the dome to the embassy's open courtyard and the ringwall gatehouse beyond.
Wylan, how hard would it be to disable one of these gates?
To get it open?
No, to keep it closed.
You mean break it? Wylan shrugged. I don't think it would be too difficult. I couldn't see the mechanism when we entered the prison gate, but from the layout, I'm guessing it's pretty standard.
Pulleys, cogs, some really big screws?
Well, yes, and a sizable winch. The cables wrap around it like a big spool, and the guards just turn it with some kind of handle or wheel.
I know how a winch works. Can you take one apart?
I think so. But it's the alarm system the cables are attached to that's complicated. I doubt I could do it without triggering black protocol.
Good, said Kaz. Then that's what we'll do.
Jesper held up a hand.
I'm sorry. Isn't black protocol the thing we want to avoid at all costs?
I do seem to remember something about certain doom, said Nina.
Not if we use it against them. Tonight, most of the court's security is concentrated on the White Island and right here at the embassy. When black protocol sounds, the glass bridge will shut down, trapping all those guards on the island along with the guests.
But what about Matthias's route off the island? Asked Nina.
They can't move a major force that way, Matthias conceded. At least not quickly.
Kaz gazed out at the White Island, head tilted, eyes slightly unfocused.
Scheming face,
Inej murmured. Jesper nodded. Definitely.
She was going to miss that look.
Three gates in the ring wall, Kaz said. The prison gate is already locked up tight because of yellow protocol. The embassy gate is bottleneck crammed with guests. The Fjordans aren't going to get troops through there. Jesper, that just leaves the gate in the Druskala sector for you and Weiland to handle. You use it to engage Black Protocol. Then wreck it. Break it badly enough that any guards who manage to mobilize can't get out to follow us.
I'm all for locking the Fjordans in their own fortress, said Jesper.
Truly.
But how do we get out? Once we trigger Black Protocol, you guys will be trapped on that island and we'll be trapped in the Outer Circle. We have no weapons and no demo materials.
Kaz's grin was sharp as a razor.
Thank goodness we're proper thieves. We're going to do a little shopping. And it's all going on Fjorda's tab. Inej, he said, let's start with something shiny.
Beside the big glass dome, Kaz laid out the details of what he had in mind. If the old plan had been daring, it had at least been built on stealth. The new plan was audacious, maybe even mad. They wouldn't just be announcing their presence to the Fjordans, they'd be trumpeting it. Again, the crew would be separated, and again, they would time their movements to the chiming of the Elder Clock, but now there would be even less room for error. Inej searched her heart, expecting to find caution there, fear, but all she felt was ready. This wasn't a job she was performing to pay off her debt to Per Haskell. It wasn't a task to be accomplished for Kaz or the dregs. She wanted this, the money, the dream it would help to secure. While Kaz explained and Jesper used the laundry shears to portion out pieces of rope, Weiland helped Inej and Nina prepare. To pass as members of the menagerie, they would need tattoos.
It started with Nina. Using one of Kaz's lockpicks and copper pyrite, Jesper had extracted from the roof, Weiland traced his best imitation of the menagerie feather on Nina's arm, following Inej's description and making corrections as needed. Then Nina sank the ink into her own flesh. A corporalnik didn't need a tattoo needle. Nina did her best to smooth the scars on Inej's forearm. The work wasn't perfect, but they were short on time and Nina's calling wasn't as a tailor. Weiland sketched a second peacock feather over Inej's skin. Nina paused.
You're sure?
Inej took a deep breath.
It's war paint, she said,
both to Nina and herself.
It's my mark to take.
It's also temporary, Nina promised. I'll remove it as soon as we're in the harbor.
The harbor.
Inej thought of the Farolind with its cheerful flags, and tried to hold that image in her head as she watched the peacock feather sink into her skin. The finished tattoos wouldn't bear up under any kind of close scrutiny, but hopefully they would do. Finally, they stood. Inej had predicted that the menagerie would arrive late. Tanta Helene loved to make an entrance, but they still needed to be in position and ready to move when the time came. And yet, they hesitated. The knowledge that they might never see each other again, that some of them, maybe all of them, might not survive this night, hung heavy in the air. A gambler, a convict, a wayward son, a lost Grisha, a Suli girl who had become a killer, a boy from the barrel who had become something worse. Inej looked at her strange crew, barefoot and shivering in their soot-stained prison uniforms, their features limned by the golden light of the dome, softened by the mist that hung in the air.
What bound them together? Greed? Desperation?
Was it just the knowledge that if one or all of them disappeared tonight, no one would come looking? Inej's mother and father might still shed tears for the daughter they'd lost, but if Inej died tonight, there would be no one to grieve for the girl she was now. She had no family, no parents or siblings, only people to fight beside. Maybe that was something to be grateful for, too. It was Jesper who spoke first.
No mourners, he said with a grin.
No funerals, they replied in unison. Even Matthias muttered the word softly.
If any of you survive, make sure I have an open casket.
Jesper said as he hefted two slender coils of rope over his shoulder and signaled for Weiland to follow him across the roof.
The world deserves a few more moments with this face.
Inej was only slightly surprised to see the intensity of the look that passed between Matthias and Nina. Something had changed between them after the battle with the shoe, but Inej couldn't be sure what. Matthias cleared his throat and gave Nina an awkward little bow.
A word,
he asked. Nina returned the bow with considerably more panache and let him lead her away. Inej was glad. She wanted a moment with Kaz.
I have something for you, she said as she pulled his leather gloves from the sleeve of her prison tunic. He stared at them.
Oh.
I got them from the discarded clothes before I made the climb.
Six stories in the dark,
she nodded. She wasn't going to wait for thanks, not for the climb or the gloves, or for anything ever again. He pulled the gloves on slowly and she watched his pale, vulnerable hands disappear beneath the leather. They were trickster hands, long, graceful fingers made for prying open locks, hiding coins, making things vanish.
When we get back to Ketterdam, I'm taking my share and I'm leaving the dregs.
He looked away.
You should. You're always too good for the barrel.
It was time to go.
Saint Speed, Kaz.
Kaz snagged her wrist.
Inej.
His gloved thumb moved over her pulse, traced the top of the feather tattoo.
If we don't make it out, I want you to know.
She waited. She felt hope rustling its wings inside her, ready to take flight at the right words from Kaz. She willed that hope into stillness. Those words would never come. The heart is an arrow. She reached up and touched his cheek. She thought he might flinch again, even knock her hand away. In nearly 2 years of battling side by side with Kaz, of late-night scheming, impossible heists, clandestine errands, and harried meals of fried potatoes and hutspot gobbled down as they rushed from one place to another, this was the first time she had touched him skin to skin, without the barrier of gloves or coat or shirt sleeve. She let her hand cup his cheek. His skin was cool and damp from the rain. He stayed still, but she saw a tremor pass through him, as if he were waging a war with himself.
If we don't survive this night, I will die unafraid, Kaz. Can you say the same?
His eyes were nearly black, the pupils dilated. She could see it took every last bit of his terrible will for him to remain still beneath her touch. And yet, he did not pull away. She knew it was the best he could offer. It was not enough. She dropped her hand. He took a deep breath. Kaz had said he didn't want her prayers and she wouldn't speak them, but she wished him safe nonetheless. She had her aim now, her heart had direction, and though it hurt to know that path led away from him, she could endure it.
Inej joined Nina at the edge of the dome to await the arrival of the menagerie. The dome was wide and shallow, all silver filigree and glass. Inej saw there was a mosaic on the floor of the vast rotunda below. It appeared in brief flashes between partygoers. Two wolves, chasing each other, destined to move in circles for as long as the ice court stood. The guests entering through the grand archway were being shepherded into rooms off the rotunda in small groups to be searched for weapons. Inej saw guards emerge with little piles of brooches, porcupine quills, even sashes that Inej assumed must contain metal or wire.
You don't have to do this, you know, said Nina. You don't have to put those silks on again.
I've done worse.
I know, you scaled 6 stories of hell for us.
That's not what I meant.
Nina paused. I know that too. She hesitated, then said, Is the hall so important to you? Inej was surprised to hear what sounded like guilt in Nina's voice. The elder clock began to chime 9 bells. Inej looked down at the wolves chasing each other around the rotunda floor.
I'm not sure why I began this, she admitted, but I know why I have to finish. I know why fate brought me here, why it placed me in the path of this prize.
She was being vague, but she wasn't yet ready to speak the dream that had ignited in her heart. A crew of her own, a ship under her command, a crusade. It felt like something that was meant to be kept secret, a new seed that might grow to something extraordinary if it wasn't forced to bloom too soon. She didn't even know how to sail. And yet, a part of her wanted to tell Nina all of it. If Nina didn't choose to go back to Ravka, a heartrender would be an excellent addition to her crew. "They're here," Nina said. The girls of the menagerie entered through the rotunda doors in a wedge formation, their gowns glittering in the candlelight, the hoods of their capes shadowing their faces. Each hood was fashioned to represent an animal, a Zemini fawn with soft ears and delicate white spots, a Kalish mare with an auburn topknot, a Shoe serpent with beaded red scales, a Ravkan fox, a leopard from the southern colonies, a raven, an ermine, and of course, the Suli lynx. The tall blonde girl who played the role of the Fjärden wolf in silvery furs was notably absent. They were met by uniformed female guards.
"I don't see her," said Nina.
"Just wait. The peacock will enter last." And sure enough, there she was, Helene Van Houden, shimmering in teal satin, an elaborate ruff of peacock feathers framing her golden head.
"Subtle," said Nina.
"Subtle doesn't sell in the barrel." Inej gave a high trilling whistle. Jesper's whistle came back from somewhere in the distance. This is it, Inej thought. She'd shoved, and now the boulder was rolling down the hill. Who knew what damage it might do and what might be built on the rubble? Nina squinted down through the glass. How does she keep from collapsing under the weight of those diamonds? They can't possibly be real.
"Oh, they're real," said Inej. Those jewels had been purchased with the sweat and blood and sorrow of girls like her. The guards divided the members of the menagerie into three groups, while Helene was escorted separately. The peacock would never be expected to turn out her clothes and lift her skirts in front of her girls.
"Them," Inej said, pointing to the group that included the Suli lynx and Kalish mare. They were heading to the doors on the left of the rotunda. As Nina checked the group with her eyes, Inej moved over the roof, following their trajectory. "Which door?" she called.
"Third on the right," Nina said.
Inej moved to the nearest air duct and lifted the grate. It would be a tight squeeze for Nina, but they'd manage. She slid down into the ventilation duct, crouching and moving along the narrow shaft between rooms. Behind her, she heard a grunt and then a loud whoomp as Nina hit the bottom of the shaft like a sack of laundry. Inej winced. Hopefully the noises of the crowd below would lend them cover. Or maybe the ice court had really big rats. They crawled along, peering in vents as they went. Finally, they were looking down into some kind of small meeting room that had been commandeered for the purpose of guards searching guests. The exotics had removed their capes and laid them on the long oval table. One of the blonde guards was patting the girls down, feeling along the seams and hems of their costumes, and even poking fingers into their hair, while the other guard kept watch with her hand resting on her rifle. She looked ill at ease with the gun. Inej knew Fjärdens didn't let women serve in the army in a combat capacity. Maybe the female guards had been conscripted from some other unit. Inej and Nina waited until the guards had finished searching the girls, their capes, and their little beaded purses.
"Ventir,"
one of the guards said as they exited the room to let the menagerie girls set themselves to rights.
5 minutes, translated Nina in a whisper.
"Go," said Inej.
"I need you to move."
"Why?"
"Because I need a clear line of sight, and right now all I can see is your ass."
Inej wiggled forward so Nina had a better view through the vent, and a moment later she heard 4 soft thuds as the menagerie girls collapsed on the dark blue carpet. Quickly she wrenched the grate loose and dropped onto the shiny surface of the table. Nina tumbled down after her, landing in a heap.
"Sorry,"
she moaned as she dragged herself upright. Inej almost laughed. "You're very graceful in battle, just not when you're plummeting." "Missed that day in school." They stripped the Suli and Kalish girls down to their underclothes, then bound all the girls' wrists and ankles with cords from the curtains and gagged them with torn pieces of their prison clothes.
"Clock is ticking," said Inej.
"Sorry," Nina whispered to the Kalish girl. Inej knew that ordinarily Nina would have used pigments to alter her own hair color, but there simply wasn't time.
Nina bled the girl's bright red color directly from the strands of her hair into Nina's own, leaving the poor Kalish with a mop of white waves that looked vaguely rusty in places, and Nina with hair that wasn't quite Kalish red. Nina's eyes were green and not blue, but that kind of tailoring couldn't be rushed, so they'd have to do. She took white powder from the girl's beaded bag and did her best to pale her skin.
As Nina worked, Inej dragged the other girls into a tall silverwood cabinet on the far wall, arranging their limbs so there would be room for the Kalish. She felt a stab of guilt as she made sure the Suli girl's gag was secure. Tanta Helene must have bought her to replace Inej. She had the same bronze skin, the same thick sheaf of dark hair. She was built differently, though, soft and curving instead of lean and angular. Maybe she'd come to Tanta Helene of her own free will. Maybe she'd chosen this life. Inej hoped that was true.
"Saints protect you," Inej whispered to the unconscious girl.
A rap came at the door and a voice spoke in Fjordan.
"They need the room for the next girls," Nina whispered.
Inej and Nina shoved the Kalish into the cupboards and managed to get the doors closed and locked, then yanked on their costumes. Inej was glad she didn't have time to dwell on the unwelcome familiarity of the silks on her skin, the horrible tinkling of the bells on her anklets. They swept on their capes and took a quick glance in the mirror. Neither of the costumes fit properly. Inej's purple silks were far too loose, and as for Nina...
"What the hell is this supposed to be?"
she said, looking down at herself. The plunging gown barely covered her substantial cleavage and clung tightly to her buttocks. It had been wrought to look like blue-green scales, giving way to a shimmering chiffon fan.
"Maybe a mermaid?" suggested Inej.
"Or a wave?"
"I thought I was a horse."
"Well, they weren't going to put you in a dress of hooves."
Nina smoothed her hands over the ridiculous costume.
"I'm about to be very popular."
"I wonder what Matthias would have to say about that outfit."
"He wouldn't approve."
"He doesn't approve of anything about you."
"But when you laugh, he perks up like a tulip in fresh water."
Nia snorted.
"Matthias the tulip. The big, brooding yellow tulip."
"Are you ready?"
Nina asked as they pulled their hoods far down over their faces.
"Yes," Inej said.
And she meant it.
"We'll need a distraction. They're going to notice four girls went in and only two are coming out."
"Leave it to me. And watch your hem." As soon as they opened the door to the hallway, the guards were waving them over impatiently. Beneath her cape, Nina flicked her fingers hard. One of the guards bleated as her nose began to gush blood down the front of her uniform in absurdly forceful gouts. The other guard recoiled, but in the next instant, she clutched her stomach. Nina was twisting her wrist in a roiling motion, sending waves of nausea through the woman's system.
"Your hem?"
Nina repeated calmly. Inej barely had time to gather up her cape before the guard bent double and heaved her dinner over the tiled floor. The guests in the hallway shrieked and shoved at each other, trying to get away from the mess. Nina and Inej sailed by, emitting appropriate squeals of disgust.
"The nosebleed probably would have done the trick," whispered Inej.
"Best to be thorough.
If I didn't know any better, I'd think you liked making Fjordan suffer."
They kept their heads down and entered the swell of people filling the rotunda, ignoring the Zemini faun who tried to direct them to the other side of the room. It was essential that they not get too close to any of the real menagerie girls. Inej only wished the cloaks weren't so easy to track through a crowd.
"This one," Inej said, steering Nina into a line far from the other members of the menagerie. It seemed to be moving a bit faster, but when they reached the front of the line, Inej wondered if she'd chosen poorly. This guard seemed even more stern-faced and humorless than the others.
He held his hand out for Nina's papers and scrutinized them with cold blue eyes.
"This description says you have freckles," he said in Kurch.
"I do,"
said Nina smoothly. They're just not visible right now. Wanna see?
No,
the Fjerdan said icily.
You're taller than described here.
Boots, Nina said. I like to be able to look a man in the eye. You have very pretty eyes. He looked at the paper, then took in her ensemble.
You're heavier than it says on this paper, I'll wager.
She shrugged artfully, the scales of her neckline slipping lower. I like to eat when I'm in the mood, she said, puckering her lips shamelessly. And I'm always in the mood. Inej struggled to keep a straight face. If Nina resorted to eyelash batting, she knew she would lose the fight and burst out laughing. But the Fjerdin seemed to be eating it up. Maybe Nina had a stupefying effect on all stalwart northerners.
Move along, he said gruffly.
Then added,
I may be at the party later.
Nina ran a finger down his arm. I'll save you a dance. He grinned like a fool, then cleared his throat, and his stern expression fell back into place. Saints, Inej thought. It must be exhausting to be so stolid all the time. He glanced cursorily at Inej's papers, his mind still clearly on the prospect of unwrapping Nina's layers of blue-green chiffon. He waved her past, but as Inej stepped forward, she stumbled.
Wait, said the guard.
She stopped. Nina looked back over her shoulder.
What's wrong with your shoes?
Just a bit big, said Inej. They stretched more than expected.
Show me your arms, the guard said.
Why?
Just do it,
the guard said harshly. Inej pulled her arms free of the cloak and held them out, displaying the lumpy peacock feather tattoo. A guard in captain's stripes wandered over.
What is it? Shisuli for sure. And she has the menagerie tattoo. But it doesn't look quite right.
Inej shrugged. I got a bad burn as a child. The captain gestured to a group of annoyed-looking partygoers gathered near the entry and surrounded by guards.
Anyone suspicious goes over there. Put her with them. And we'll take her back to the checkpoint to have her papers reviewed.
I'll miss the party, said Inej. The guard ignored her, seizing her arm and pulling her back toward the entry as the other people in line stared and whispered. Her heart began to pound. Nina's face was frightened, pale even beneath her powder. But there was nothing Inej could say to reassure her. She gave her the briefest nod. Go, she thought silently. It's up to you now.
29. Matthias. 9 bells. What if I say no, Brecker? It was mere posturing, Matthias knew that. The time for protest had long passed. They were already jogging down the gentle slope of the embassy roof toward the Druskella sector. Waylon panting from exertion, Jesper loping along with ease, and Brecker keeping pace despite his crooked gait and lack of cane. But Matthias disliked how well this low thief could read him. What if I don't give you this last bit of myself and my honor? You will, Elvar. Nina is on her way to the White Island right now. Are you really going to leave her stranded? You presume a great deal. Seems like the perfect amount to me. These are the law courts, right? Jesper said as they raced over the roof, catching glimpses of the elegant courtyards below, each built around a burbling fountain and dotted with rustling ice willows. I guess if you're going to be sentenced to death, this isn't a bad place for it. Water everywhere, said Wylan. Do the fountains symbolize gel? The wellspring, mused Kaz, where all sins are washed clean. Or where they drown you and make you confess, Wylan said. Jesper snorted. Wylan, your thoughts have taken a very dark turn. I fear the dregs may be a bad influence. They used a double segment of rope and the grappling hook to cross to the roof of the Druskella sector. Wylan had to be looped into a sling, but Jesper and Kaz moved easily across the rope, hand over hand, with unnerving speed. Matthias approached with more caution, and though he didn't show it, He did not like the way the rope creaked and bowed with his own weight. The others pulled him onto the stone of the Druskele roof, and as Matthias stood, he was struck by a wave of vertigo. More than any place in the ice court, more than any place in the world, this felt like home to him. But it was home turned on its head, his life viewed at the wrong angle. Peering into the dark, he saw the massive pyramid skylights that marked the roof. He had the disconcerting sense that if he looked through the glass, he would see himself running drills in the training rooms, seated at the long table in the dining hall. In the distance, he heard the wolves barking and yapping in their kennel by the gatehouse, wondering where their masters had gone for the night. Would they recognize him if he approached with an outstretched hand? He wasn't sure he recognized himself. On the northern ice, his choices had seemed clear. But now his thoughts were muddied with these thugs and thieves, with Inej's courage and Jesper's daring, and with Nina. Always Nina. He couldn't deny the relief he'd felt when she'd emerged from the incinerator shaft, disheveled and gasping, frightened, but alive. When he and Wylan had pulled her out of the flue, he'd had to force himself to let her go. No, he would not look through those skylights. He could afford no more weakness, especially on this night. It was time to move forward. They reached the lip of the roof overlooking the ice moat. From here, it looked solid, its surface polished bright as a mirror and illuminated by the guard towers on the White Island. But the moat's waters were ever shifting, concealed only by a wafer-thin skin of frost. Kaz secured another coil of rope to the roof's edge and prepared to rappel down to the shore.
"You know what to do," he said to Jesper and Wyland. 11 bells and not before."
"When have I ever been early?" asked Jesper. Kaz braced himself for the descent and vanished over the side. Matthias followed, hands gripping the rope. Bare feet pressed against the wall. When he glanced up, he saw Wylan and Jesper gazing down at him. But the next time he looked, they were gone. The shore surrounding the ice moat was little more than a slender, slippery rind of white stone. Kaz perched there, pressed against the wall and frowning out at the moat.
"How do we cross? I don't see anything."
"Because you are not worthy."
"I'm also not nearsighted. There's nothing there."
Matthias began edging along the wall, running his hand over the stone at hip level.
"On Hrinkala, the Druskele finish our initiation," he said. "We go from aspirant to novice Druskele in the ceremony at the sacred ash."
"Where the tree talks to you."
Matthias resisted the urge to shove him into the water.
"Where we hope to hear the voice of Jell. But that's the final step. First, we have to cross the ice moat undetected. If we are judged worthy, Jell shows us the path."
In truth, Elder Druskele simply passed the secret of the crossing along to aspirants they wished to see enter the order. It was a way of culling the weak or those who had simply not meshed successfully with the group. If you'd made friends, if you'd proven yourself, then one of the brothers would take you aside and tell you that on the night of the initiation, you should go to the shore of the ice moat and run your hand along the wall of the Druskele sector. At its center, you would find an etching of a wolf that marked the location of another glass bridge, not grand and arching like the one that spanned the moat from the embassy wing, but flat, level, and only a few feet wide. It lay just under the frozen skin of the surface, invisible if you didn't know to look for it. Commander Brum himself had been the one to tell Matthias how to find the secret bridge, as well as the trick for crossing it undetected. It took Matthias 2 passes along the wall before his fingers found the carved lines of the wolf. He rested his hand there briefly, feeling the traditions that connected him to the Order of the Druskele, as old as the ice court itself.
"Here," he said.
Kaz shuffled over and squinted across the moat. He leaned out and Matthias yanked him back. He pointed to the guard towers on the top of the wall surrounding the White Island.
"You'll be visible," he said. "Use this." He scraped his hand along the wall, and his palm came away white. The night of his initiation, Matthias had rubbed his clothes and hair with the same chalky powder. Camouflaged from the view of the guards in their towers, he'd crossed the slender path to the island to meet his brothers. Now he and Kaz did the same, though Matthias noticed Kaz tucked his gloves neatly away first. Inej must have returned them. Matthias stepped onto the secret bridge, then heard Kaz hiss when the icy waters of the moat closed over his feet. Chilly, Brecker?
If only we had time for a swim. Get moving.
Despite his taunts to Kaz, by the time they were halfway to the island, Matthias's feet had gone almost completely numb, and he was keenly aware of the guard towers high above the moat. Thruskella would have come this way earlier tonight. He'd never heard of any aspirant being spotted or shot at on the bridge, but anything was possible.
All this to be a witch hunter? Kaz said behind him. The dregs need a better initiation.
This is only one part of Hrinkala.
Yes, I know. Then a tree tells you the secret handshake.
I feel sorry for you, Brecker. There is nothing sacred in your life. There was a long pause, and then Kaz said,
You're wrong.
The outer wall of the White Island loomed up before them, covered in a rippling pattern of scales. It took a moment to locate the ridge of scales that hid the gate. Only a short while ago, Thruskella would have been gathered in this niche of the wall to welcome their new brothers ashore, but now it was empty, the iron grating chained. Kaz made quick work of the lock, and soon they were in a slender passage that would lead them to the gardens that backed the barracks of the Royal Guard.
Were you always good at locks? No.
How did you learn?
The way you learn about anything. Take it apart.
And the magic tricks? Kaz snorted.
So you don't think I'm a demon anymore?
I know you're a demon, but your tricks are human.
Some people see a magic trick and say, impossible. They clap their hands, turn over their money, and forget about it 10 minutes later. Other people ask how it worked. They go home, get into bed, toss and turn, wondering how it was done. It takes them a good night's sleep to forget all about it. And then, there are the ones who stay awake, running through the trick again and again, looking for that skip in perception, the crack in the illusion that will explain how their eyes got duped. They're the kind who won't rest until they've mastered that little bit of mystery for themselves. I'm that kind.
You love trickery.
I love puzzles. Trickery is just my native tongue.
The gardens, Matthias said, pointing to the hedges up ahead. We can follow them all the way around to the ballroom. Just as they were about to emerge from the passage, two guards rounded the corner, both in black and silver Thruskella uniforms, both carrying rifles.
Perchenga!
One of them shouted in surprise. Prisoners.
Sten!
Without thinking, Matthias said,
Dejenet, Jel Commanden.
Stand down, Jel wills it so. They were the words of a Thruskella commanding officer, and he delivered them with all the authority he'd ever learned to muster. The soldiers exchanged a confused glance. That moment of hesitation was enough. Matthias grabbed the first soldier's rifle and head-butted him hard. The Thruskella collapsed. Kaz slammed into the other soldier, knocking him over. The Thruskella kept hold of his rifle, but Kaz slipped behind him and brought his forearm across the soldier's throat, applying pressure until the soldier's eyes shut, and his head fell forward as he slipped into unconsciousness. Kaz rolled the body off him and stood. The reality of the situation struck Matthias suddenly. Kaz hadn't picked up the rifle. Matthias had a gun in his hands, and Kaz Brecker was unarmed. They were standing over the bodies of two unconscious Thruskella, men who were supposed to be Matthias' brothers. I can shoot him, Matthias thought. Doom Nina and the rest of them with a single act. Again, Matthias had the strange sense of his life viewed the wrong way up. He was dressed in prison clothes, an intruder in the place he'd once called home.
Who am I now?
He looked at Kaz Brecker, a boy whose only cause was himself. Still, he was a survivor and his own kind of soldier. He had honored his bargain with Matthias. At any point, he might have decided that Matthias had served his purpose. Once he'd helped them draw up the plans, once they'd gotten past the holding cells, once Matthias had revealed the secret bridge, and whoever he'd become, Matthias was not going to shoot someone unarmed. He'd not yet sunk so far. Matthias lowered his weapon. A faint smile touched Kaz's lips.
I wasn't sure what you'd do if it came down to this.
Neither was I, Matthias admitted. Kaz lifted a brow, and the truth struck Matthias with the force of a blow. It was a test. You chose not to pick up the rifle.
I needed to be sure you were really with us, all of us.
How did you know I wouldn't shoot?
Because, Matthias, you stink of decency.
You're mad.
Do you know the secret to gambling, Halvar?
Kaz brought his good foot down on the butt of the fallen soldier's rifle. The gun flipped up. Kaz had it in his hands and pointed at Matthias in the space of a breath. He'd never been in any danger at all.
Cheat. Now let's clean up and get those uniforms on. We have a party to go to.
One day you'll run out of tricks, Dungeon.
You'd better hope it's not today.
We'll see what this night brings, Matthias thought, as he bent to the task. Trickery is not my native tongue, but I may learn to speak it yet.
30. Jesper. 9 bells and quarter chime. Jesper knew he should be mad at Kaz for going after Pekka Rollins and blowing their first plan to bits, and for pushing them into deeper danger with this new scheme. But as he and Wylan crept along the Druskeller roof toward the gatehouse, he was too damn happy to be mad. His heart was pounding, and adrenaline crackled through his body in delicious spikes. It was a little like a party he'd once gone to on West Stave. Someone had filled a city fountain with champagne, and it had taken about 2 seconds for Jesper to dive in with boots off and gullet open. Now, it was risk filling up his nose and mouth, making him feel giddy and invincible. He loved it, and he hated himself for loving it. He should be thinking about the job, the money, getting out from under his debt, making sure his father didn't suffer for his antics. But when Jesper's mind even brushed up against those thoughts, everything in him recoiled. Trying not to die was the best possible distraction. Even so, Jesper was more conscious of the sounds they made now that they were away from the crowds and chaos of the embassy. This night belonged to the Druskala. Hringkala was their holiday, and they were all safely ensconced on the White Island. This building was probably the safest place for him and Wylan to be at the moment, but the silence here seemed weighted, sinister. There were no willows or fountains here, as there had been at the embassy. Like the prison, this part of the ice court wasn't intended for public eyes. Jesper caught himself nervously wiggling the baleen wedged between his teeth with his tongue, and forced himself to stop before he triggered it. He was fairly sure Wylan would never let him forget a blunder like that. A large pyramid-shaped skylight looked down on what seemed to be a training room, its floor emblazoned with the Druskala wolf's head, the shelves lined with weapons. Through the next glass pyramid, he glimpsed a big dining hall. One wall was taken up by a massive hearth, a wolf's head carved into the stone above it. The opposite wall was adorned by an enormous banner with no discernible pattern. A patchwork of slender strips of cloth, mostly red and blue, but some purple too. It took Jesper a moment to understand what he was seeing. Saints, he said, feeling a little sick. Grisha colors. Wylan squinted. The banner? Red for Corporal Kai, blue for Ethereal Kai, purple for Material Kai. Those are pieces of the kefta that Grisha wear in battle. They're trophies. There are so many. Hundreds. Thousands. I would have worn purple, Jesper thought, if I'd joined the Second Army. He reached for the fizzy elation that had been bubbling through him moments before. He'd been willing, even eager, to risk capture and execution as a thief and hired gun. Why was it worse to think about being hunted as a Grisha? Let's keep moving. Just like the prison and the embassy, the gatehouse in the Druskala sector was built around a courtyard, so anyone entering could be observed and fired upon from above. But, with the gate out of operation, the courtyard battlements were as deserted as the rest of the building. Here, slabs of sleek, black stone were inlaid with a silver wolf's head. The surface is lit with eerie blue flame. It was the one part of the ice court he'd seen that wasn't white or gray. Even the gate was some kind of black metal that looked impossibly heavy. A guard was visible below, leaning against the gatehouse arch, a rifle slung over his shoulder. "Only one?" asked Wyland. Matthias said four guards for non-operational gates. "Maybe yellow protocol is working in our favor," said Wyland. "They could have been sent to the prison sector, or maybe there are 12 big Fjerdans keeping warm inside." As he and Wyland watched, the guard opened a tin of Jirda and shoved a wad of the dried orange blossoms into his mouth. He looked bored and irritated, probably frustrated to be stationed far from the fun of the Hringkala festivities. "I don't blame you," Jesper thought, "but your life's about to get a lot more exciting." At least the guard was wearing an ordinary uniform instead of Druskala black, Jesper considered, still unable to shake the image of that banner from his mind. His mother was Zemini, but his father had the Kalish blood that had given Jesper his gray eyes. And he'd never quite shaken the superstitions of the Wandering Isle. When Jesper had started to show his power, his father had been heartbroken. He'd encouraged Jesper to keep it hidden. "I'm afraid for you," he'd said. "The world can be cruel to your kind." But Jesper had always wondered if maybe his father had been a little afraid of him, too. "What if I'd gone to Ravka instead of Kerch?" Jesper thought. "What if I'd joined the Second Army? Did they even let fabricators fight? Or were they kept walled up in workshops?" Ravka was more stable now, rebuilding. There was no compulsory draft for Grisha. He could go, visit, maybe learn to use his power better. Leave the gambling dens of Ketterdam behind. If they had succeeded in delivering Bo-Yul Bayur to the Merchant Council, anything might be possible. He gave himself a shake. What was he thinking? He needed a dose of imminent peril to get his head straight. He rose out of his crouch. "I'm going in." "What's the plan?" "You'll see." "Let me help." "You can help by shutting up and staying out of the way. Here," Jesper said as he hooked the rope over the side of the roof, letting it drop down behind a row of stone slabs lining the walkway. "Wait until I've immobilized the guards, then lower yourself down."
"Jesper."
Jesper took off across the roof, keeping low as he gave the lip overlooking the courtyard a wide berth. He positioned himself on the wall behind the guard. As noiselessly as he could, he secured another section of rope to the roof and slowly began to rappel down the wall. The guard was almost directly beneath him. Jesper was no wraith, but if he could just make the drop silently and sneak up behind the guard, he could keep things quiet. He tensed, ready to drop. Another guard strode out of the gatehouse, clapping his hands in the cold and talking loudly. Then a third appeared. Jesper froze. He was dangling over three armed guards, halfway down a wall, completely exposed. This was why Kaz did the planning. Sweat broke out on his brow. He couldn't take three guards at once. And what if there were more in the gatehouse, ready to ring the alarm?
Wait, said one of the guards. Did you hear something?
Don't look up. Oh, saints, don't look up.
The guards moved in a slow circle, rifles raised.
One of them craned his head back, scanning the roof. He began to turn. A strange, sweet sound pierced the air.
Scared and fear, da kinden hurt, sing linden eisen in de wanden.
Feared in words Jesper didn't understand, crested over the courtyard in a shimmering, perfect tenor that seemed to catch upon the black stone battlements.
Wyland.
The guards whirled, rifles pointed at the walkway that led to the courtyard, seeking the source of the sound.
Olander, one called. Nilsson, said another.
Their guns were raised, but their voices were more bemused and curious than aggressive. What the hell is he doing? A silhouette appeared in the walkway arch, lurching left and right.
Scared and fear, the kinden heard sing,
Wyland sang, doing a surprisingly convincing impression of a drunk but very talented Fjerdin. The guards burst out laughing, joining in on the song.
Linden Eisen,
Jesper leapt down. He seized the closest Fjerdin, snapped his neck, and grabbed his rifle. As the next guard turned, Jesper slammed the butt of the rifle into his face with a nasty crunch. The third guard raised his weapon, but Wyland snagged his arms from behind in an awkward hold. The rifle dropped from the guard's hands, clattering against the stone. Before he could cry out, Jesper lunged forward and rammed the butt of his rifle into the guard's gut, then finished him with two strikes to the jaw. He reached down and tossed one of the rifles to Wyland. They stood over the guards' bodies, panting, weapons raised, waiting for more Fjerdin soldiers to flood out of the gatehouse. No one came. Maybe the fourth guard had been pulled away for a yellow protocol. Is that how you shut up and stay out of the way? Jesper whispered as they dragged the guards' bodies out of view behind one of the stone slabs. Is that how you say thank you? Wyland retorted. What the hell was that song?
National anthem,
Wyland said smugly.
Schoolroom Fjerdin, remember?
Jesper shook his head. I'm impressed with you and your tutors. They liberated two of the guards' uniforms, leaving their own prison clothes in a tidy bundle. Then, bound the hands and feet of the guards who still had pulses, and gagged them with torn pieces of their prison clothes. Wyland's uniform was far too big, and Jesper's sleeves and pants looked ridiculously short, but at least the boots were a reasonable fit. Wyland gestured to the guards. Is it safe to leave them, you know, alive? I'm not big on killing unconscious men.
We could wake them.
Pretty ruthless, Merchling. Have you ever killed anyone? I'd never even seen a dead body before I came to the barrel, Wyland admitted. It's not something to be embarrassed about, Jesper said, surprising himself a little, but he meant it. Wyland needed to learn to take care of himself. But it would be nice if he could do it without getting on friendly terms with death. Make sure the gags are tight. They took the extra precaution of securing the bound guards to the base of a stone slab. The poor nubs would probably be discovered before they managed to get loose. Let's go, Jesper said, as they crossed the courtyard to the gatehouse. There were doors to the right and left of the arch. They took the right side, climbing the stairs cautiously, though Jesper didn't think anyone would be lying in wait. Some guard might be charged with protecting the gate mechanism at all cost. But the room above the arch was empty, lit only by a lantern set on a low table where a book lay open next to a little pile of whole walnuts and cracked shells. The walls were lined with racks of rifles, very expensive rifles, and Jesper assumed the boxes on the shelves were filled with ammunition. No dust anywhere.
Tidy, Fjerdins.
Most of the room was taken up by a long winch, handles at each end.
thick loops of chains spooled around it. Near each handle, the chains extended in taut spokes through slots in the stone. Wyland cocked his head to the side. Huh? I don't like that sound. What's wrong? I was expecting rope or cables, not steel chains. If we're going to make sure the Fjerdins can't get the gate open, we're going to have to cut through the metal. But then how do we trigger Black Protocol? That's the problem. The Elder Clock began to sound 10 bells. I'll weaken the links, said Jesper. Look for a file or anything with an edge. Wyland held up the shears from the laundry. Good enough, said Jesper. It would have to be. We have time, he told himself as he focused on the chain. We can still get this done. Jesper hoped the others hadn't met with any surprises. Maybe Matthias was wrong about the White Island. Maybe the shears would snap in Wyland's hands. Maybe Inej would fail, or Nina, or Kaz, or me. Maybe I'll fail. 6 people. But 1,000 ways this insane plan could go wrong.
31. Nina. 9 bells and half chime. Nina dared one more glance over her shoulder, watching the guards drag Inej away. She's smart. Deadly. Inej can take care of herself. The thought brought Nina little comfort, but she had to keep moving. She and Inej had clearly been together, and she wanted to be gone before the guard who had stopped Inej extended his suspicions to her. Besides, there was nothing she could do for Inej now, not without giving herself away and ruining everything. She ducked through the hordes of partygoers and shucked off the conspicuous horsehair cloak, letting it trail behind her, then allowing it to drop and be trampled by the crowd. Her costume would still turn heads, but at least now she didn't have to worry about a big red topknot giving away her location. The glass bridge rose before her in a gleaming arc, shimmering in the blue flames of the lanterns on its spires. All around her, people laughed and clung to one another as they climbed higher above the ice moat, its surface shining below, a near-perfect mirror. The effect was disconcerting, dizzying. Her 2 tight beaded slippers seemed to float in midair. The people beside her looked as if they were walking on nothing at all. Again, she had the unpleasant understanding that this place must have been built by fabricator craft in some distant past. Fjerdins claimed the construction of the ice court was the work of a god or of Senge Egmund, one of the saints they claimed had Fjerdin blood. But in Ravka, people had begun to rethink the miracles of the saints. Had they been true miracles, or simply the work of talented Grisha? Was this bridge a gift from Jell, an ancient product of slave labor? Or had the ice court been built in a time before Grisha had come to be viewed as monsters by the Fjerdins? At the highest point of the arch, she got her first real view of the White Island and the Inner Ring. From a distance, she'd seen the island was protected by another wall, but from this vantage point she saw the wall had been crafted in the shape of a leviathan, a giant ice dragon circling the island and swallowing its own tail. She shivered. Wolves, dragons, what was next? In Ravkin's stories, monsters waited to be woken by the call of heroes. Well, she thought, we're certainly not heroes. Let's hope this one stays asleep. The descent on the bridge was even more dizzying, and Nina was relieved when her feet struck solid white marble once more. White cherry trees and silvery buttonwood hedges lined the marble walkway, and security on this side of the bridge seemed decidedly more relaxed. The guards who stood at attention wore elaborate white uniforms accented with silver fur and less than intimidating silver lace. But Nina remembered what Matthias had said. As you moved deeper into the rings, security actually tightened. It just became less visible. She looked at the partygoers moving with her up the slippery stairs and through the cleft between the dragon's tail and mouth. How many were truly guests, noblemen, entertainers? And how many were Fjerdin soldiers or Druskella in disguise? They passed through an open stone court and the palace doors into a vaulted entry several stories high. The palace was made of the same clean, white, unadorned stone as the ice court walls, and the whole place felt as if it had been hollowed out of a glacier. Nina couldn't tell if it was nerves, imagination,